Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on Monday, the 14th of November, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll hear from Jeffrey Cloud about the situation at Eagle Crest. We'll hear a report on some new downtown businesses produced earlier this month by Amanda Compton. Tana Peters and Kelsey Johnston will be here to highlight Thursday's New Umbrellas Fashion Show at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. We'll also hear another story by Christy Loney. Also, the Writers' Almanac, Birdone Music, and more today on a Juneau afternoon. The forecast for tonight, cloudy skies, a chance of snow showers, low temperatures 22 to 28 degrees above zero. Forecast for Tuesday, cloudy skies and a chance of snow with high temperatures around 32 degrees. Tuesday night looks like snow with high temperatures around 25 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. There's anger and concern among some First Nations groups in British Columbia over a controversial mine. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the mine was rejected by Canada's Environmental Assessment Agency, but is now getting a second chance.
The agency has now agreed to a second review of the controversial Prosperity Mine. The original proposal for the massive gold and copper mine failed the federal government's first environmental review process. But the owners, the Taseko Mines, has now launched what it's describing as a new proposal. The Federal Environment Minister, Peter Kent, asked the agency to review the environmental concerns raised in the previous assessment and take into consideration any proposed changes. Several First Nations oppose the project because the original proposal would have resulted in the destruction of a lake that they consider culturally significant to them. Chief Marilyn Baptiste represents one of the communities fighting the mine.
From our young children, less than 7 years old, more than 90 years old, our people, our elders who don't even speak English, presented before the panel. We had made it very clear the impacts and the concerns and the issues we had. Those were justified by the experts' submissions as well as the panel and its decision. Nothing has changed.
First Nations near the proposed site of the mine have concerns about water quality, possible damage to salmon runs, and lost archaeological opportunities. Many of them say they're disappointed and deflated by the decision. The new review could take about a year to complete. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A federal judge in Oklahoma City says he wants a quick and efficient end to a lawsuit filed by the Choctaw and Chickasaw Nations over indigenous water rights in southeastern Oklahoma. KGOU's Kurt Gortney reports.
The two tribes want the court to block the Oklahoma Water Resources Board from selling water rights to Sardis Lake in the southeastern part of Oklahoma. Attorneys for the Choctaw and Chickasaw Nations told U.S. District Judge Lee West the federal court is the only place they have to go to protect what they say is their right for control over water in their historic territories. The tribes say a 19th century treaty gives them control over the water in 20 counties in southeast Oklahoma. But the city of Oklahoma City, which has effectively bought the lake for its own use, says the nations lost that control after being on the losing side of the Civil War. Judge West told the tribes and the attorneys representing the interests of the state of Oklahoma and Oklahoma City to present names of mediators that could settle the disagreement. But attorneys for Oklahoma say they will ask the judge to stop the federal action so the matter can be settled in the state courts. Attorneys for the tribe said they've been asking the state of Oklahoma to acknowledge their water rights for nearly 20 years. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney in Oklahoma City.
The Navajo Nation Human Rights Commission and San Juan College are hosting a speaker series this week in Farmington, New Mexico. The series includes discussions on Navajo human rights, the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, racial profiling, and employment and consumer rights. The speakers will include people from the city of Farmington and Navajo Nation Law Enforcement, Legal Services, and Human Rights Commission. The series is taking place during the Community College's Native American Week. It kicks off today through Wednesday. During this month in 2010, Canada endorsed the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and the United States voted against the non-binding declaration in 2007. All have since reversed their positions. The Canadian government said the endorsement was a way to strengthen its relationship with Native people. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for Native America Calling comes from Solstice Advertising, bringing creativity to Native businesses and nonprofits, from research and strategy to print, web, and broadcast production. Learn more at solsticeadvertising.com. If you are a Native American who experienced discrimination from the USDA while trying to get a farm loan, you can get free legal help with filing a claim at meetings held around the country through December. Details and a schedule of meetings is at IndianFarmClass.com or 1-888-233-5506. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTVO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Police Department has advised that people drive with their headlights on and, of course, drive slowly and carefully at the same time with the current weather conditions. Again, drive with your headlights on. Amanda Compton produced a story a couple of weeks ago about the new downtown businesses in Juneau, and it's so good that we thought we would repeat it.
The Rookery is the vision of co-owners Jason Shima and Travis Smith.
We had a joke at one point that we opened our own business because we didn't want to fill out another job application.
Smith is a passionate coffee aficionado.
Bring the coffee quality up a notch for what I felt was being offered around town. All the coffee is from a French press and then put into an air pot. I don't think anybody else in town does that.
Besides top-notch coffee, the food menu includes calzones and other baked goods.
The whole idea is to have good, fast food. We don't call it fast food, it's quick food. Difficult because it's up a set of stairs.
The Rookery has a bit of a quirk. The kitchen is located up a flight of stairs above the seating area.
Keeps everybody slim and trim.
Up and over a few blocks from the Rookery, Daniel Martin's Wild Oven Bakehouse opened the first week in October in the basement below Observatory Books. By the time I arrived on opening day, the crowd had thinned, though a handful of customers, including Bernadine Peterson and Brian Lupro, were avidly sampling bread.
It is just crunchy and good, and I don't know what kind of bread it is, but it's just delicious, whole wheaty.
Martin started working with bread on a farm in Kentucky, initially just to feed the employees. But after selling it during the farm's market season, he was hooked on dough. That was 3 years ago. Then he spent a year apprenticing with various bakers on the East Coast.
Everyone I met said, "Hi, I'm Daniel. I'm going to Juneau to start a bakery. Can I work for you for free?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." Some of them even fed me.
Something besides flour, water, and yeast?
Yeah, sometimes, if I was lucky.
After his apprenticeship year, Martin, who lived in Juneau before his Kentucky stint, returned to his previous place of employment, Rainbow Foods. He credits Rainbow owner David Otteson for his generosity in providing experimental kitchen space. In January, he found the approximately 400-square-foot space below Observatory Books on Franklin Street, rolled up his sleeves, and greased his elbows.
This kitchen started out as pencil lines on paper.
Martin worked to upgrade the plumbing and the electrical systems. He bought three large stackable ovens. I revisited the Wild Oven after its first full week in operation.
Doing at least twice as much sales as I anticipated. I'm scrambling to keep up.
Martin was working a batch of many raisin bread. He had weighed and measured the ingredients the night before.
I mix the doughs by hand in these tubs.
He cuts the dough into 1.7-pound pieces, which are then set aside to proof, or rise. Most of his dough is proofed in handmade wicker baskets.
Brotformen in German.
The doughs are proofed for up to 2 hours, a process accelerated by the use of a sourdough starter.
The starter was given to me by a woman in town, and it's been in Juneau since at least the 50s.
Each of the three ovens holds 12 to 16 loaves of bread. The loaves bake down to a final 1.5 pounds. Martin's currently baking a rotating list of about a dozen types of bread per week. Working the cash register on opening day was Johanna Evans. Evans is part of the three-person team headed by Rebecca Gagin, or Becca. Jessica Ruthinger, Gagin's friend from culinary school, completes the triad. Gagin operated a food cart parked outside the Capitol building this summer.
When you're standing outside and your umbrella ends right where you stand so that the water just rolls off and drips down your shirt, you think to yourself, this is not something I'm going to be able to do for very much longer.
So Gagin made a trip down to Portland and returned with a trailer, Ruthinger, and no plan. Gagin approached various parking lot owners regarding a staging area without much luck.
Most of them seemed like almost suspicious.
The Juneau Empire owns the Capital City Weekly and hence the line of associated parking spots agreed to rent her a space, which was fortuitously adjacent to an empty business space available for lease. The space isn't equipped for a kitchen, so Gagin's plan is to cook in the trailer with Ruthinger, while Evans mans the interior dining space. Gagin got most of her furniture from Craigslist and garage sales.
I just think it gives it more character.
Gagin's trailer is currently parked in the space she's renting. It's bright pink. Gagin and Ruthinger will be serving up a full breakfast menu, the panini sandwiches and cupcakes Gagin served from her cart this summer, as well as other baked goods, coffee, and tea from the local Red Onion Organic Spice and Tea Company.
We're trying to come up with ideas to get the boys to come in.
Bacon-wrapped things.
Bacon-wrapped bacon.
Bacon-wrapped bacon, beer yeah. Batter it, fry it, and wrap it in bacon.
Yep, done.
They're happy.
Downtown in Alaska's capital city, I'm Amanda Compton.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown. When you've got worries, all the noise and the hurry seems to help, I know. Downtown, just listen to the music of the traffic in the city. Linger on the sidewalk where the neon signs are pretty. How can you lose? The lights are much brighter there. You can't forget all your troubles, forget all your cares, so go downtown. Things will be great when you're downtown. No finer place for sure, downtown. Everything's waiting for you. Downtown. Don't hang around and let your problems surround you. There are movie shows downtown. Maybe you know some little places to go to where they never close. Downtown, just listen to the rhythm of a gentle bossa nova. You'll be dancing with them too before the night is over. Happy again. The lights are much brighter there. You can forget all your troubles, forget all your cares, so go downtown, where all the lights are bright, downtown, waiting for you tonight, downtown, you're gonna be alright
This is Bird Note. By now, retirees and other people who want to escape the dark days of winter have headed to California or parts of the Southwest or to sunny Florida. We call them snowbirds because they leave as soon as the snow begins to fall and temperatures drop. But there's another type of snowbird, the dark-eyed junco. Although you may see dark-eyed juncos here in summer, come fall, many, many more arrive to spend the winter. They've been nesting in the mountains or farther north. To them, this is a benign winter habitat. These juncos often find seed feeders for winter feasting. Watch for a small bird with a dark, sooty hood that covers its head and chest, a gray-brown back, and a white belly. However, The most attention-grabbing aspect of this shy junco is its tail. As the bird darts off, giving a sharp twittering call, it flashes the white outer feathers of its tail. Enjoy these dark-eyed juncos now and through the winter. Come spring, most of these snowbirds will head north or into higher elevations to begin a new breeding cycle. Celebrate a full year's worth of birds with the Birds of BirdNote calendar, available at birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
is 319, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a June afternoon. On the phone with me now from Eagle Crest is Jeffrey Cloud. Jeffrey, thank you for being on the air with me today.
Well, thanks for having me today, Jeff.
So it's an interesting situation we have up there today.
It's very interesting. We are definitely experiencing winter here on the mountain, and we've got a lot of snow, but we're just trying to get the word out that the Eagle Crest area is not yet open for the season. And with all of this snow that we have on the mountain, it's creating some issues that we're a little concerned about.
How unusual is this year?
This is very unusual. We've all been talking that this is more snow that we've seen this early in the season, more snow that we've seen in November for quite a number of years. So we feel confident that we are approaching a fabulous ski season. We're very excited about it, and we're looking forward to getting the mountain open.
But as of today, you're not encouraging people to come to Eagle Crest because of the dangers of avalanche and other dangers?
That is correct. We have received over 14 inches of new snow in the last 24 hours on the mountain. And what that snow is doing, it's creating high avalanche danger on the mountain. We've also experiencing some increasing winds. And because the Eagle Crest ski area is not open, there's no ski patrol service, and we are not doing any avalanche control on the mountain. This includes the inbound area of the mountain. And we're just trying to get the word out about that if people choose to come up and hike the mountain and ski or ride the mountain, they need to treat even the inbound area of Eagle Crest as backcountry terrain and use their good backcountry terrain sense. So, and be prepared for avalanche dangers and unmarked obstacles.
So I understand that people have been dropping their kids off at the Eagle Crest this morning.
Yes, that was a concern for us, I think, because it was a snow day today, and school was not in session, and there was snow at Eagle Crest. The logical thing for everyone to think is we're going to go to Eagle Crest. But without the mountain being open yet, we're working really hard to get the mountain open. It's raised some alarm flags in all of us when we started to see younger hikers on the mountain. Usually this time of year we see people that have a little bit more backcountry sense, know what's going on, and today we've seen a lot of kids on the mountain. So we're just encouraging everyone to use good sense and recognize that even with all this snow, Eagle Crest is still not open yet for the season, and to treat it as backcountry terrain.
And when is it scheduled open?
Our budgeted opening day is Saturday, December 3rd, but we've received 3 feet of snow since Friday. So we're optimistic that an early opening is quite possible.
All right, and if people need more information on Eagle Crest, how can they find out about it?
Well, luckily, they can now go to our website at skijuneau.com to find more information. Our website has been down since Friday, but it is now up and ready to go. And I'm also happy to report that we have extended our early bird season pass sale until Sunday, November 27th. And we're doing that because our website did go down during the final 2 days of our early bird sale. Folks were unable to buy season passes and multi-visit cards online. So we made the decision this morning to extend that early bird sale until Sunday, November 27th.
All right, Jeffrey Cloud, thank you for being on the air with me today. Again, the word is they do not go up to Eagle Crest expecting it to be open and expect to find backcountry conditions.
Yes, that is correct. Use caution and make sure you're prepared for backcountry condition on the mountain.
How do people get prepared for backcountry conditions?
There's classes out there that you can take. You need to have a probe and a shovel, know how to use it. You need to always ski or ride with a partner. And communicate. When the ski area is open, the ski patrol does the avalanche control and make sure that the mountain is safe to ski or ride on. But this time of year, ski patrol is not doing avalanche control work, so you're pretty much on your own.
All right, Jeffrey Cloud, thank you for being on the air with me today.
All right, thank you so much, Jeff. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm William Todd Hunt, music director for Juno Lyric Opera's upcoming presentation of La Boheme. We've been working hard on our performance of Puccini's most popular opera, and we can't wait to share it with you. The curtain will part, the baton will rise, and music will fill McPheeters Hall. Join us for any or all of the November 18th, 19th, 25th, 26th, and December 1st and 2nd performances. Tickets are available at the usual locations and at JunoOpera.org.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 14th of November, 2011. It's the birthday of the artist who said, "I would like to paint the way a bird sings." Claude Monet, born in Paris, 1840. His father ran a grocery store, hoped his son would take over for him, but the son decided to become an artist, much to his father's dismay. Began his studies at the age of 10. He worked first in charcoal, drawing caricatures, which he would sell on the streets. Learned oil painting from an artist named Eugène Boudin, who encouraged him to paint outdoors, to learn to draw well and appreciate the sea, the light, the blue sky. At art school, he met Pierre-Auguste Renoir and Alfred Sisley, artists who rebelled against the fashionable academic painting of the day with its meticulous detail. And they experimented with a new style of landscape painting, producing rapid sketches, using short, broken brush strokes, trying to capture the fleeting quality of the light. A critic referred to them as impressionists. He meant it as an insult, and they adopted it as their label. Monet painted scenes from everyday middle-class life and got good reviews for his painting The Woman in the Green Dress, 1866. His model, Camille Dansieux, became his lover and later his wife. She died of tuberculosis, 1879. Monet painted a portrait of her on her deathbed and moved to a small farmhouse surrounded by an orchard in Giverny, bought a strip of marshland across the road from the house, designed a water garden. Spent nearly 30 years in his gardens, planting and painting irises and tulips, wisteria and bamboo. His home and gardens in Giverny are now the property of the French Academy of Fine Arts, and you can go see them. And it's the birthday of the satirist P.J. O'Rourke, born Toledo, 1947, the man who said, "There is only one basic human right, the right to do as you damn well please. And with it comes the only basic human duty, the duty to take the consequences." P.J. O'Rourke, who said, "No drug, not even alcohol, causes the fundamental ills of society. If we're looking for the source of our troubles, we shouldn't test people for drugs. We should test them for stupidity, ignorance, greed, and love of power." Here's a poem for today by Tamara Madison, entitled "The Return of the Subjunctive." Oh, the subjunctive, may it make its bold return, may it ride back proud in liveried coach, may its two fine horses snort and paw the ground, and escorted by its staunch attendants, if and whether, may it descend in velvet cloak and black-gloved hand the lacquered steps of hope and happenstance. May it fix upon us its deep, uncertain gaze. I shall be there to greet it, though my company be small and moody. I shall beg it stay, and may its presence give some respite from the steely glare of indicative, a mantle to shield us from passive's clammy chill. May it light again the land between the world that was and is, and that which still might be, and may we tread again desire's leaf-dappled path of possibility." The Return of the Subjunctive, a poem by Tamara Madison, from her collection Wild Domestic, published by Pearl Editions, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Constant Contact, combining the power of email marketing and social media for more customers and more time back on your clock. ConstantContact.com. and by Novo Nordisk since 1923, committed to diabetes care and areas of unmet medical needs at novonordisk-us.com. Produced by Kathy Roach and written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Programming is supported in part by McDonald's, now serving the McRib sandwich. McDonald's, open daily on Trout Street in the Valley.
Kasimidina, jazu eno nanrua riba reni fanano manidina. Tare, tara ni rani tani jo. Tiko, tikulo taka timba takaluku. Tare, tara ni rani tani jo. Tiko, tikulo taka timba takaluku. Yumbaiyo, yumbaiyo. Yumba iyo kalula tukwa tampu milu wa kwe. Yumba iyo, yumba iyo, yumba iyo timavela kufatifalu wa kwe. Peki pulane, mana kuwa kwera tanerandani tese mandrea ziturane. Tare, sarani rani tani jo. Tiko, tiko lota katimba takaluko. Tare, sarani rani tani jo. Tiko, tiko lota katimba takaluko. Yumba iyo, yumba iyo. Yumba iyo kanuwa tuka tapu nilu wa kwe. Yumba iyo, yumba iyo, yumba iyo zimavela kufatifalu wa kwe.
Time is 3:34 and you are tuned to KTVO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guests are here to talk about a fall fashion fundraiser called No Umbrellas, Real Fashion for Real Alaskans. It's Juno Fashion Fundraiser for Hospice and Home Care of Juno. Tana Peters of TP Alaska Designs and Chelsea Johnston from the Alaska Brewing Company. We'll be talking about the event going on Thursday at the Juno Arts and Culture Center at 7 o'clock in the evening. Thank you for being in the station with me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So first of all, Tana, could you tell me about TP Alaska Designs, please?
Well, TP Alaska Designs is my personal business, and for this event, basically, TP Alaska Designs is all over the place. We make scarves and hats and do crafty things, so they're going to be in the show. But on top of that, I also do graphic design and scenic design. That's what my background is in. So I'm helping out in every which way possible by making sure that the event hopefully looks good, everybody loves it, and the posters are, you know, printed and stuff like that.
And also Kelsey Johnston from the Alaska Brewing Company. For those listeners who aren't familiar with the Alaska Brewing Company, if there are any, could you please talk about it with us, please?
Absolutely. Alaskan Brewing has been here for 25 years. It was founded by Marcy and Jeff Larson. Our goal as being a successful brewery in Juneau is to give back to this community. So,
yay!
Yeah.
So Real Fashion for Real Alaskans called No Umbrellas. Why No Umbrellas?
Well, that was probably my brainchild. And, you know, the thing about Juno and fashion is that we wanted to make this fashion show, well, as it says, real fashion for real Alaskans. So not just about, like, froofy heels, although I love froofy heels. But also, you know, what do real people wear? And real people in Juno do not use umbrellas. I mean, some people do. I'm not saying you can't. But mostly, you know, they just blow out with the wind and you can't use them anyway. So I kind of wanted to hit home, like, hey, man, this is for you. This is what you're really going to wear and walking down the street or the runway, whatever your runway happens to be, the dock, anything. Wherever you're walking, you know, you can rock it. And so that was the target that we were going for there.
Are rubber boots required?
Rubber boots are not required. They're welcome, but totally not required. In fact, if you want to wear your heels, this is a wonderful chance to get out in the town and wear your heels. But it also, you know, is a wonderful chance to wear your extra tufts. It's whatever you want.
A lot of businesses are taking part. Can you name them, please?
Yeah, we've got a whole heck of a lot. So I can just go really quick. Abby's Kitchen, Alaska Perfume Company, Alaskan Brewing Co. Depot, Annie Kale's, Boheme, Chilcat Cove Cones and Treats, Choco Boutique, Cuts Online, Figment, Juno General Store, Miners Postal, The Roller Girls, Koya Coats, NYR Organic, Paradise Beach Tan and Travel, Rendezvous, The Rookery, Shoefly, Silver Bow Bagels, Southeast Living Magazine, Taku Harley, Tom's Pots, and finally me, TP Alaska Designs. Woo! Is that enough?
That's been great. Can you paint me a picture of the event as you imagine it?
Yeah, I think so. I hope so. It's going to be like every event in Juneau, right up to the last minute, straightening all the lines out and making it all happen, putting all the lights up, but I think it's going to be awesome.
How many models do you expect?
We're looking, I think it's going to be about 30 plus. So each section of the show has, you know, anywhere from 3 models to 15 to 20 models. So it's going to be really fun.
Cool. How much does it cost to get in?
It's $21 for the regular seats, and then there's actually a VIP section for $26, which gets you everything that the regular tickets gets you, but a better location. And you also get a free, well, a coupon for a drink and also a mini cone from Chilcat Coves and Cones, so that's pretty fun.
There's also going to be some boutique shopping available.
Mm-hmm. Yep, in the front lobby area, there'll be boutique shopping throughout the night, so you can eat, drink, shop, and have a fashionable time. It's like all in one.
You want to talk about some of the items in this silent auction, Kelsey?
Absolutely. So we've got some pretty cool things, actually. Tom's Pot, the potter that lives here in Juno, is donated a pretty awesome piece. Also, Harley Davidson has donated quite a few items. One of my favorites, we are going to do door prizes in addition to the silent auction. And Silverbow has offered a night, including champagne. So I think that would be a lot of fun. And in addition to that, we do have some surprises from the brewery, some never-before-seen awesome beer swag. So definitely come down and take a look.
And there's food and drink available?
Absolutely. There's definitely going to be Alaskan beer there, but we're also going to do beer cocktails. I won't say what they are on the air. You're just going to have to come down and try them for yourself, but they're amazing. And we'll also have, of course, wine available. And then Abby's is doing all the catering, so it's going to be a very full night.
Yummy.
Yeah.
Abby's catering is sure staying busy these days. They're also doing the trail mix auction.
Oh, yeah. She's all over the place. She's
worth it.
They do a lot of work, and it's really delicious. I find every one of them and go to all of them.
I know you probably don't want to steal the surprise, but can you elaborate on what some of the models might be wearing?
Sure. Well, we've got so we have different things. So in my section of the show, it's mostly scarves and this sort of knitwear, which maybe doesn't sound that exciting, but it's going to be super cool.
Amazing.
And cozy. Yeah. And then the section for the Depot, of course, they're going to wear Depot swag. But, you know, the Alaskan Brewing Company has expanded their line so immensely now that they have the downtown Depot location. So it's going to be really fun because there's sure to be stuff that no one's ever seen.
Exactly.
In this town.
Exactly.
And
we've got, you know, every girl at least loves the Shoe Fly. And so they're going to be showing off some of their new shoes. And I'm pretty excited for that.
Yeah, shoes and boots. And then there's even, for the guys and girls, there's a little section of the show with some bikinis and some beachwear for when you need to go on your holiday vacation.
Exactly.
So we've got a little bit of everything going on.
I wouldn't wear advice bikinis for today's weather.
Yes, no. No, that's like I'm going to go traveling to, you know, Hawaii or something in the middle of winter.
This is $21 to get in, and then $26 is the
VIP ticket, yep.
Mm-hmm. And this is an over 21 event?
It is over 21, yes. So please make sure that if you're over 21, that's wonderful. Bring your ID. And if you are under 21, you have to be accompanied by a parent, a legal guardian. So at all times, you need to be with your legal guardian. So that's the rule.
All right, Tana Peters and Kelsey Johnson, do you have anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
I just want to add really quick that we are going to have a fabulous halftime show with the Roller Derby Girls.
Yes. Yeah, the Juno Roller Girls are going to do a crazy, fun halftime show with their bout fits, I think they call them.
Yep.
So we've got a little bit of everything in this show. So come on down, brave the weather. It's not too bad. I just drove here. I tried.
It's supposed to be nice on Thursday.
So maybe Thursday will be wonderful and sunny. Come on out.
How can people get tickets?
People can get tickets at jhc.org or the Depot, the brewery. I think Carside's got some.
And Home and Hospice is also selling.
Yeah,
them.
So they're all over the place. And, of course, in the JHC building at the Jack.
And this is all a benefit for Hospice and Home Care of Juneau.
Yes, it is. Hospice and Home Care is a brewery that is a nonprofit that the brewery has voted on, the Alaskan Brew Crew, and so this all came about because we wanted to give a little bit more to them this year, and so
every year the Brew Crew actually donates the tips from the little gift shop beer tasting area. So any tips they make, they donate all of them to a charity. So each year they pick a charity, and this year's charity is Hospice and Home Care. So it's really exciting because not only are they going to donate the year's tips, but we're also going to throw this event and try and make even more money for them. And all of the proceeds from the ticket sales and all of the beer proceeds go to Hospice and Home Care. And then each of the boutiques also are required to donate some of their profits. So the suggested is like 10% at least. So pretty much anything you buy there will go to Hospice and Home Care in some way. So that's really exciting as well. I mean, it's like fashion, fun, food, drinks, plus giving to a charity.
Yeah, can't go wrong.
All right, Tana Peters and Kelsey Johnston, thank you so much for coming by the station today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I should say, if people need more information on it, is there a phone number people can use?
A good place to call would be the brewery, actually, which is just our main number, 907-780-5866.
Yeah, excellent.
And that's the best place, yeah.
All right, thank you for coming by.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The City and Borough is hosting a Household Hazardous Waste Cleanup Day Sunday, November 20th from 9 to 4:30. Items like old paint, varnish, pesticides, poisons, cleaners, and fluorescent bulbs are accepted. All batteries must have their terminals taped and individually placed in baggies, including household batteries. The Hazardous Waste Collection Facility is on Commercial Boulevard near Costco and is open to all Juneau households. For more information, call 780-6009. Thanks for participating in cleaning up Juneau's environment.
Former Juneau resident Christy Loney came up with a book called Life by the Lynn. It's a series of reminiscences about her job as a caretaker at the Shrine of St. Therese. It'll feature a section of that book right now.
This one is titled Creation. Back in February 1994, I was sitting in the living room of our log cabin home, looking out the window, and was struck by the wonder and glory of God's creation as I watched the waves come crashing in on the beach nearby. I picked up my journal and wrote these words. As a wave nears the shore, it explodes in one accumulated burst of energy. Then spent, it spreads itself on rock and sand until nothing is left but foam. But no, not so. Yes, it is true it leaves its mark of where it's been, but turning, it recedes to join the depths of other waves, and gaining strength, deep cries to deep, until once again, with strength restored, it flows full force with goal in sight, and breaks itself once more on sand and shore. With mesmerizing repetition, again and again, all day long, the waves replay their age-old pattern of life since time began. Awesome energy, exploding beauty, pulsating power, white-capped wonder, endless flowing, the sea. It calls to me, come. So I did. Out to the glory of a white-capped day I went. I stopped my journaling, put on my coat and boots, my wolfskin fur hat, my warm Shetland wool mittens, and with camera in hand, I stepped off the porch into the snow. The wind had died down and the sun was warm on my face. What a day! The snow spilled over the top of my winter wellies as I crossed the parking lot, and finally made it to the pathway and across the causeway. The sound of waves crashing on the rocks filled the cool air, and the sun made the snow and water dance with life, as the wind suddenly picked up both and tossed them in the air. I wanted to yell, "Hello!" to the whole wide world, and hug the sea and sky. I felt I could fly to the top of the snow-capped mountains across the water, and longed to ride the waves to shore. It was the kind of day I wished would last forever. It was a day to lock in the jewel box of my heart, to take out and enjoy again and again, reliving the glory of God's creation when life needed a lift.
Baby, when you go.
Hans Deville and Yusuf Adur. Time is 3:53 and you are tuned to KTLO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Number of closures and warnings tonight on the Juneau afternoon. Juneau police are reminding drivers to slow down and turn on their headlights on due to poor visibility in areas. Capital Transit is operating on their winter route schedule until midnight tonight. Service will be discontinued on St. Anne's Avenue, Cordova Street, Davis Avenue, Lemon Creek Road, and Franklin and 4th Streets downtown. There's no service on Cordova Street. You should wait for the bus at the Breeze Inn to stop. No service to St. Anne's. Please wait at the bus for the bus at the Douglas Post Office stop. No service on Franklin or 4th Street. You should wait for the bus at the Main Street stop. No service on Davis Avenue and Lemon Creek Road. Please wait for the bus at Glacier Highway. Unless otherwise notified, Capital Transit will return to normal service on Tuesday. Other cancellations: the Juneau Human Rights Commission scheduled for today at 5:15 p.m. in the City Hall Conference Room has been canceled due to lack of a quorum. The CBJ Social Services Advisory Board's meeting scheduled for today at 5:15 has also been canceled. The next meeting is scheduled for November 21st at 5:15 p.m. in the Downtown Library Small Conference Room. Also, the Bartlett Hospital Regional Hospital Board of Directors special meeting scheduled for today at 5:15 p.m. has been canceled and it will be rescheduled soon. Tonight's computer classes at the Learning Connection have also been canceled. The Alaska Heritage Foundation Institute Brown Bag Luncheon Lecture Series featuring Ed Thomas has been canceled because of snow conditions and it has been rescheduled for Thursday.
I am scared of you.
I am scared of you.
I am scared of you.
I am a leader.
Volunteer.
I give back to my community.
Alter,
science,
faith.
I am scared of you.
I am scared of you.
Here's my stories.
Here are stories.
It is a goal of many young people to break out of the cycle of alcoholism that sometimes comes along with family history.
My name is Victoria Lynn Anderson. I was born and raised in Dillingham, Alaska.
Victoria is 19 years old, and her positive attitude is easy to see when you meet her. She's back to the University of Alaska Anchorage now for her second year of college and to begin her studies in the nursing program there. Victoria does not drink.
Sometimes when I'm around certain people and they're using it, I'm more tempted to drink with them, but I just kind of get away from the situation. That way I don't have to be pressured into drinking and doing drugs and stuff like that. Growing up, I moved off and on from between my mom and my godmother, and my mom suffered from alcoholism as well as my grandmother, and it kind of really affected the way that I looked at it. Sometimes I'd feel really bad, and then I kind of learned that it wasn't something that I should get into if I didn't want to get into it. And my mom's been doing really good, and her and I have become more and more close.
Victoria says it was her mom who helped her see being a nurse is what she wants to do.
I really want to go home and be a nurse there because nurses are really needed in the rural areas.
Victoria's nursing studies will build upon basic training she had as part of the Sitka First Responders Team when she was a student at Mount Edgecombe High School. I'm Shanna Sheehy.
I am a teenager.
I am an Alaskan. I give back.
Do you see me? Recognize youth ages 12 to 19 at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services, Division of Behavioral Health.
Join Trail Mix Saturday, November 19th at Centennial Hall for a celebration of the Peterson Lake Trail. Live music and dancing with the Cajun bluegrass band Fay Dodo Juno will be followed with an Italian buffet dinner by Abby's Kitchen. Enjoy a no-host bar and bid on more than 100 exciting auction items from flight seeing trips to power tools. All proceeds support Trail Mix's work to restore the Peterson Lake Trail in 2011. Doors open at 6 p.m. Tickets are now on sale at the Jack, Hearthside Books, and at JunoTrails.org.
Glimpse of
time is 3:58, and you are tuned to KTLO News in Juneau. We broadcast 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTLO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Stavis listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTLO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTUO FM on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. We're also online at www.ktuo.org. Coming up tomorrow at 3 o'clock on a Juneau afternoon, Pat Moore will be your host. He'll talk with Cinnamon Simpson about the Northern Lights Junior Theater's upcoming production of Peter Pan. Scott and Mary will be here to highlight hospice and home care of Juneau. We'll find out about the upcoming Discovery Day with guest Beth Weigel from Discovery Southeast. And Kristen Guerrero will be here with the word about this Saturday's Hunger Banquet at Thunder Mountain High School. That red is Almanac Bird Known Music Award tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. It is a winter storm running until 5 a.m. tomorrow morning, with snow showers predicted for tonight becoming heavy at times by late evening. Snow accumulation up to 6 to 10 inches expected. Low temperatures around 28 degrees. Forecast for Tuesday, snow showers likely mainly in the morning with accumulation of up to 2 inches expected and high temperatures around 32 degrees. Tuesday night, more snow with accumulation of 2 to 6 inches expected. And on Wednesday, more snow. Looks like a chance of snow on Wednesday night as well. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon, and have a great evening.